Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Ginder of Chesterfield, Missouri, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Let's begin with our usual set of questions. We'll start with you, Bill Mayer. What are the discussion topics on your list for the day?
Well, I guess the question I get asked the most, I'll go ahead and forward to the group here. What will it take to get the corn market out of this rut that we're in, and what kind of carryout number do we have to get down to get the December corn to make some break the recent highs here?
Dan Zwicker.
What impact, if any impact, the spring has had on maybe total acreage?
Greg Ginder.
Well, I think one of the interesting things over the next couple months is going to be the effect on cash basis for corn and beans going forward when this crop all comes to market, what's left to market. So that'll be interesting.
Elaine Cubb?
I think weather, this is the time of year to talk about weather. In the ways that it has affected acreage, as Dan talked about, but also, you know, there's drought going on out here in the western parts of the Corn Belt, so that is something to keep an eye on and maybe worth talking about.
Well, I do think that is the case, Elaine. We've been discussing this a bit during the closing market report with the meteorologist over the last couple of weeks, especially parts of the Dakotas. Have you traveled in those areas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just sort of a general sense of panic because this is the wrong time of year to be getting this kind of drought. If you had, you know, D0 or D1 drought in July or August, you know, that doesn't inspire the same amount of panic as it does when you really need that moisture to get a crop started, and particularly the pastures. And yes, all over Memorial Day, I did travel kind of across both Dakotas, and the pastures are really grim looking. And like I said, there's just sort of this general sense of panic. And, you know, the cornfields and the soybean fields, things have emerged. Obviously, planting pace was not affected. When you plant in dust, bins will bust, they say, but that depends on some rain eventually happening. So we hope that rain happens. But I will say in the markets, you know, maybe we're not seeing any real sure concern about that in the corn market, and certainly not in the soybean market. And maybe that's justified, especially when you look at the drought monitor. The parts of the Dakotas where this is affecting is not really the big corn growing areas, like southeast South Dakota, for instance, which is, you know, effectively little Iowa as far as corn growing potential. That's still okay. But where I'm talking about, or where I'm looking, or where I drove this over this past weekend, is spring wheat country. And you absolutely do see that on the futures charts. We are seeing an upward trend in spring wheat. This September contract, 582, I'm looking at. So that's kind of the one bright spot where we're actually seeing some sort of a weather response in the grain markets. And I don't know to what extent it would ever carry over into corn and soybeans.
Well, let's continue our travels. I know, Dan, you came up from Texas to the Quad Cities area in Illinois. Did you happen to go through St. Louis in the Litchfield area or a different direction? And in either case, what did you see?
No, not that I come up here to the Quad Cities. I go up through the Lake of the Ozarks. So I do get a little taste of what went on in Northeast Missouri. I get to look at that crop, and then I cross the river at Hannibal and then start heading up through western Illinois and here on into the Quad Cities. So I do miss central Illinois. Now, when I was living in Bloomington and did the Texas trip, we did go through Litchfield all the time. So, but what I saw is, like we kind of talked about on this afternoon's comments, is the crop is extremely small for this time of year. And of course, I guess, you know, the thing that you remember is the last two or three crops. In the last two, three crops, things were much more mature at this time of year. Yes, our planning numbers are pretty well on par with average, except for maybe some extreme cases in parts in the eastern Corn Belt. But you can really see that this crop needs some growing degree days to get it to grow. It's been fairly cool up here where I'm at. I do think it's going to warm up a little bit, but I don't see any major heat, at least in the forecast, at least for right now. And I think this is what this crop probably needs the most. But the stands look good. Everything population is going to be good in this particular area. I don't think we were probably as wet as we were maybe in central Illinois and parts of Indiana and Ohio.
So that would be along the Mississippi River, roughly speaking, just to the south of Rock Island Moline. Bill Mayer, have you traveled through central Illinois very much?
Yeah, I've traveled through central Illinois pretty extensively. We did have our 10-state conference call just this morning, and it pretty much confirmed what the USDA had on their progress and condition report on Monday or Tuesday. And that's there's a difference. The east is not nearly as good. The west is in pretty good shape. The east has improved over the last 2 weeks as the weather's warmed up and we've got a little bit drier conditions here. There's been some progress made, especially in the last 5 or 6 days, it sounds like. But still a lot of concerns out there, especially not just in the eastern belt, but especially in the eastern belt, as far as nitrogen goes and the ability of the plant to get, you know, make use of the nitrogen, the compaction in the soils with the hard rains and stands. And just as Dan mentioned, one of the big concerns is just the point where the crop is at this June 1st date compared to where we have been normally the last few years. And when you look at the USDA numbers for yield, I mean, they pretty much got us in there with a 2014 type crop. And I guess I'm not sure I see that right now.
Dan, do you think there will be much of an acreage switch at all?
This planting completion numbers, I'm not too sure. The way I understand the way they go, I mean, if a farmer had planned to plant 500 acres of corn and at toward the end here, he decided that, well, all he's going to get planted is 400, then he's 100% planted. He didn't plant, he didn't get his original intentions planted, but those planting reports don't show that, do they?
Well, I checked this week. In fact, I called Lance Honig at USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. Farmers do not do the assessment. It's normally FSA and extension personnel. And so they would keep track of not what a farmer individually might have planted or expect to plant, but of what might be planted in an area in general. So if it were me, you'd go out and say that was a cornfield last year, probably a soybean field this year, and you'd begin to count that, and I'd be able to take into account probably too what I thought would be needed to be replanted. So the numbers are kind of calculated that way.
Todd, if I could just throw in here, I think what we're kind of seeing on our call this morning is there is some switching going on in those areas where it's been really wet, and you know, like Kentucky, for example, where it's really getting to the point where if you plant it now, you're going to have some real heat that you're dealing with the pollination, and they try to avoid that in some of the southern Illinois, Kentucky, even some of the Missouri areas. So we are seeing some shifting taking place, but you know how extensive it is. I couldn't really put a number on it, I don't believe.
So one of the things you've said in the past, Dan, or at least that I've heard, is that acreage tends to grow from the March report to the June 30th acreage report. Do you think that will be the case?
I don't think it'll be the case this year. But I do know by watching the markets for I don't know how many years longer than I would really want to admit, but it always seems to be the case in March. Everybody wants to know, where did all the acres go? Because the March numbers have a tendency to come in a little lower than what they thought. And then when June comes around, they get the June numbers and they go, where did all the acres come from? And that, I think, is why we have a tendency. But the planting season is key to that phenomena. And if you have an average growing season, you'll usually pick up acres. But I think since we've been in an abnormally wet situation, probably more so east of the Mississippi River than west of the Mississippi River, we're probably likely to lose some acres. Now, whether we lose enough to make a difference in the balance sheets, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But when we're in extreme wet conditions, you have a tendency to lose all the low-lying bottom-type ground, whether it's creek bottom, river bottom, the areas that have a tendency to flood the most. A lot of those just go by the wayside. Now, how many acres they are, you know, east of the Mississippi River, I guess we'll find out on that June report. But my guess is that the acres won't grow from the March report. Corn number, now the bean number may grow, but I think the corn number would probably come down some.
So, Dan, during the closing market report on Thursday afternoon, you suggested that it's not really necessary that we break out either to the up or the downside of the sideways pattern corn has been in. I'll come back to you in just a bit and maybe get some more from you on that. But let's turn to Elaine Cubb. What do you think? Is it possible to move outside of the pattern, and to which direction?
Well, I will say, so last year I did a bunch of statistics and came to the conclusion that basically this is the time of year. Early June is the time of year when you have the best statistical probability of the corn market hitting its annual high. So if this is it, if this is the annual high, I mean, that's something to really think about. So other than statistics, I can't really come up with anything, either statistics or the USDA changing some acreage or yield numbers even next week. Other than those two sort of nebulous reasons, I don't have a lot of hope for us breaking out of this rut.
Greg Ginder?
Dan was mentioning the flooding. We've had quite a bit of flash flooding and river flooding in Missouri. And southern Illinois has had some real problems. I think the focus here lately has been just trying to get all the beans in, and appears to me that farmers want to go replant some of the corn. But at this point in the game, it appears that they may have to just kind of deal with what Mother Nature has given them, because every day that goes by and we seem like we get a rain every two or three days that just keeps them one more day or one more week out, it stands the potential that if they go in and try to replant any of their corn, they're going to be looking at doing more damage than good. So with that being said, I certainly believe that given the way we've started this growing period, it certainly seems like it's friendly corn. And, you know, I would say that alone, as we start to talk about the yield per acre, I have a strong feeling that we'll be seeing that yield per acre go down, and with that, the market will probably end up in kind of a bullish trend.
Bill Mayer, can I have you follow up too?
Well, I guess it seems to me like when I look at the current situation, what we have to accomplish two things if we're going to try to break out to the upside on corn, and one would be we have to continue to work our way through the huge amount of old crop corn that we still have on hand, because every time we get a rally, we see cash corn move, and basis kind of represents that. We haven't really ever gotten to where we've had a real strong basis here in the last month or so. The other thing I think is we do have the managed funds in a fairly heavy short position, and we have to see something that gets them somewhat concerned about that position that short position they have on. What that takes, I'm like Elaine. I remember Elaine talking last year about the same time of the year about the June period, and that's kind of when we saw her move higher. But I guess bottom line, from a farmer's viewpoint, if we can get the corn to move through this 395 area, I guess, on the December futures, I think you probably have to take advantage of it and have some kind of a plan ready, because it may be short-lived, it seems to me like. But I guess I think with some of the concerns that we've got on the weather, we could see that happen sometime during this month of June.
And Dan, we'll come back to you. Where do you think we are in the cycle?
Well, yeah, my work would indicate that we're in a window here this late May into the first couple weeks of June to try to kick up a rally into July. Now, I'm not too much worried. You know, we all are trying to figure out what's going to get this market to go. And it's new crop prospects is what's going to get it to go. A major deterioration of new crop prospects. Old crop is not going to stop a rally if the trade sincerely becomes concerned with new crop supplies. So if somewhere along the line, you know, the western third of the Corn Belt gets into a major drought situation where you really begin to knock down yield protection, yield potential, and that begins to drag down the yield potential that's already been, I think, for the most part, dinged up enough that it may have difficulty reaching trend line. Then I think this market can get to go. And I think you'll know it when it wants to go. And the first thing that you'll notice is all of a sudden the bull spread will start working. And that'll be a major character change of the market. All of a sudden, everybody's going to start buying July corn, and July corn will take the lead. And that is, or it may be September corn. Whenever this weather event, if one does occur, that begins to knock down new crop prospects, it'll take off, because what the market will want to do is buy as much of the old crop corn as it can, because new crop supplies are going to be short. So you'll know it when it happens, because all the strength will come up to the front months, and that is what we call is a bull market characteristic. And so we'll be breaking out of the lead option sideways pattern. That'll be the one that we'll be wanting to break out of, because it'll be the front month contract that's going to take us to the higher level. Whether or not July here's only got, you know, 30 days left or 29 days, or actually only 20 trading days left probably. But we're probably not going to do anything until we see that June report, how many old crop stocks we have and what kind of planting numbers we have. That'll really, then if we get into weather problems in July, we'll do the breaking out to the upside during the month of July and August.
Have any of you yet decided to move around your national average yield? USDA is at 170.7 with a carryout of 2.11 billion bushels.
I would be leaning more towards the 169 right now, and, you know, just under 2 billion carry out, probably something like that. It just seems a little bit, the 171, like I say, that's a 2014 type yield. I'm not sure that I see that with some of the situation I see around here in Central Illinois and Indiana.
Does that put you maybe at a 360 cash price?
Yeah, I think maybe. Yeah, 350, 360 average price, yeah.
Anybody else?
I would just sort of generally agree with Bill that this has not been an ideal start to the year. I don't think that we're going to reach that 171, but I also am not so sure that it's going to show up in the June report. I think that the data that USDA used to come up with their number, it's probably not, they don't have enough of that data from the planting data in May and June to change it yet. So I'm not expecting to see it change in next week's report, but I generally agree with the idea that this year will not match that number.
I'll throw out 165 just to get the buzz going.
Got your horns on.
Well, I mean, let's take 500.
The guy from Texas with his horns on. Go figure.
Well,
so where does that put you, Dan?
Huh? Well, we're going.
Where does that put you on carry out?
Carry out. Oh, we'll go down to about a 1.5 and. And Elaine, we've got a lot of hay to sell you guys from Texas. We're just loaded up with hay
awesome.
After the last several years of El Nino. So So we do have a lot of hay.
Yeah,
but we are
in a different direction.
We are too getting dry in Texas. Of course, this is the time of year that we actually stop mowing yards. I mow yards during February, March, and April, and a little bit in May, and then kind of put the mower away in June. But and I know the mowers are just getting started up here. But I do think the Western Corn Belt is going to struggle for some moisture this year. But I do think the Eastern Corn Belt is going to, I don't think it'll be as wet as everybody thinks it is. I think it's going to be more cool and dry.
All right, Dan. So if we did a 168, where do you think we stand on carryout?
Well, 168, I think we got to get down to 165 to move the needle. I mean, if we're going to move the needle, we got to move the needle. And then all of a sudden, balance sheets really begin to change, you know.
And you're going to take half a billion bushels out?
We'll take a 600, yeah, half a billion bushels, 600 million out. We got to move the needle. You've got to get down to 1.5, and then we'll do some breaking to the upside on that. And
definitely short covering. Definitely short covering.
But see, we're not going to, yeah, see, that's, the problem with that is the way USDA operates on their reports, unless we get a real shocker in June, we're not going to know hardly anything about this yield until September. So this might be a year that we don't see price strength until the combines start rolling. And the way things are going, the combines may not roll until October, you know.
And therein lies the problem with the old crop sales, right?
Well, I think that'll the market will begin to, we'll have to see what July weather is. June, July weather, like I said, we'll, you know, three weeks from now is going to be 21st of June. We're going to have summer solace, see what kind of weather pattern we have around that area. I think that'll lay the groundwork for what we're going to get during the next 6 weeks. And if it's going to be a hot and dry or hot and or if it's going to be cool and wet or going to be cool, we'll kind of have an idea, I think, as we get to June 20th, what kind of summer, if we're going to break out of this weather pattern that we've had dominantly for the most of spring here and break into another weather pattern, that should develop here over the next couple of weeks.
Hey, Greg Ginder, a different topic. The Chinese canceled some cargoes of soybeans they were purchasing from Brazil. They say that's because, like here in the United States, they couldn't make the crush work. What do you think the impact has been and will continue to be if that's the case?
Well, I certainly think that that definitely has an impact. I mean, because they're not switching those cargoes over to the U.S. I think what they're looking at more than anything is buying in soybean meal. Seems like we've got enough of it around to make it cost effective for them to take more meal in than anything. But yeah, their crush margins are not very positive, and I think that's what you're seeing. Plus, the Brazilian farmers are not overly enthusiastic about selling their beans with the currency the way that it is. So I have a strong suspicion that those beans are a little bit more expensive than they used to be.
Bill Mayer, have producers done a good job as we think they have in pricing out soybeans?
I guess for the most part, I think they have. I think that if a person was very aggressive on making bean sales, as we get down here to this $9 November level or below, I think you got to look at that and say, is there a place to come in, maybe buy some calls back or something like that on previous sales. But my read on it is that they've got good sales on the books. Now, I've talked to some elevators and really was a little bit disappointed what some of the local elevators told me as far as their purchases, that they were more in line with what they'd bought the last couple of years, not really anything over and above what I guess I'd consider a normal year here. So maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it seems like they've definitely been more aggressive on bean sales than on corn sales.
So your thought was that they were maybe 35% to 40% along, and the elevator was telling you what, 15% to 20%?
Yeah, 20% to 25%. Yeah. So, and you know, that's a very small sampling, Todd, so I don't want to draw too much of a conclusion from that. I think that most farmers that I talk to have are right now pretty satisfied with their their bean sales that they have on, especially as they're looking out here at their fields currently. I think they're satisfied with not wanting to go out and make a lot more right now.
One more item on the bean acres, Elaine Cub. There was some thought that there was enough financial pressure in the Western Corn Belt that they would be putting more bean acres in. Has that been the case?
I think it's the case from wheat, except that, like, you know, where I'm sitting here where it's all so dry, maybe the acres went in, and maybe, you know, but they're not that promising. So I don't know that influence from the western part of the Corn Belt, where you're going from the wheat acres to soybean acres, the expectation was that would really add to the overall U.S. production. And I think given the state of moisture out here, that it's not going to add to U.S. production as much as previously people worried about.
Let's get a final thought from each of you now. We'll start with you, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.
I think we're going to struggle to get our growing degree days and get this crop mature. And I think we're vulnerable to an early frost this year.
Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think you have to be ready to make a move if we do get a June period here where we have some movement in the markets. Don't just sit there and watch it go by. I'd also like to just say we've had a couple of farm accidents in the last few days. Everybody really be careful out there. I know it's been a tough spring and hard to get things done, but just make sure that you're aware of what's around you.
Elaine Cobb from Mastering the Grain Markets.
Well, I know people have put out some fairly bullish ideas and made a good case for the potential for bullishness, but I was just in the FSA office certifying acres yesterday, and while they had folks in there, they had us all sign the LDP paperwork for harvest. So if that's what it takes to put the fear of God into people, I mean, I think if you don't have more than 20% of your soybeans sold at this point, I mean, you really got to think about pre-harvest hedging.
Indeed, that'll make you think. Hey, Greg Ginder of FC Stone, your final word, please.
Well, with the with regards to the old crop corn, I would definitely say that we're in for a little bit of a rally here. But the only concern is if everybody tries to push the remainder of this 2 billion bushels through the same door, the basis will definitely weaken up. So hopefully it's not a situation where we get a dime in the board and lose a nickel on the basis. But I would definitely recommend having some orders in place with your local elevators. That way, it takes a lot of thought out of it, and you get this old crop moving to town.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do look us up online. You can listen to the whole of our program there at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. You'll find all of our other programming, too. Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report are both podcast. Again, you can listen online at willag.org. You can find them in the iTunes Store, on Google Play, in Stitcher, and on the NPR One app. Our panelists this week for Commodity Week have been Greg Ginder of FC Stone. Thank you very much to them. Of Chesterfield, Missouri, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.